This week, MSU Science Festival will focus on STEAM, the STEAM subjects to be more precise, science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math. The cluster of subjects has got more attention in recent years because American employers commonly struggle to fill technical jobs involving science. The MSU Science Festival includes events beginning this week in East Lansing and all next week in Detroit, demonstrations, expo zones, and astronomy night. Our next guest will deliver the festival's opening address tomorrow night at Wharton Center. Dr. Brian Green is a renowned physicist and author who teaches at Columbia University. His presentation, Stories from the Frontiers of Discovery, is about innovation, exploration, and discovery. I spoke with Brian Green and asked him what makes a successful science festival.
It's the quality of the programming. You need programming that feels nothing like the classroom, that allows kids and adults to have an experience of science that really can touch them emotionally, that can get them fired up, that doesn't feel like they're under the gun to memorize facts or take exams. It's really the joy and wonder of exploration.
Well, the New York Times has called the World Science Festival, of which you are a co-founder, a new cultural institution. I would take it that such a successful event embodies what you just described.
Well, we try, and we were certainly thrilled with that reaction from the Times and the reactions from many of the folks who've come to the festival. We have as a fixture of what we do a blending of art and science in many of the events that is unusual and allows for a kind of emotional impact of scientific ideas that you don't often get when you just go to a lecture or just go to a demonstration.
Would you say generally, Brian Green, that science has broad appeal in this country?
It's a good question, and it's a somewhat subtle one. I would certainly say that when science is brought out of the laboratory and provided to the public in a way that captures the true drama of exploration, when it really captures the wonder of discovery, when it's accessible, it doesn't make you feel like you can't get it. I just tell you, across the board, people love the kinds of ideas that science is engaged with. I mean, the fact that time slows down near a black hole, or that lengths squeeze when you go near the speed of light, or that particles can quantum tunnel through barriers, or this wonderful result just of 6-8 weeks ago of the detection of gravitational waves produced by two colliding black holes on the other side of the universe, it's hard to understand how you couldn't get excited about these things so long as you feel like you can get it.
The focus of your opening address tomorrow night at Wharton Center is titled The Drive to Innovate, Stories from the Frontiers of Discovery, and it focuses on the challenges scientists have faced when doing their work. I don't want to ruin your address by any means, but could you talk to us generally about the role of perseverance and courage in scientific discovery?
Well, it's huge, and Einstein is the wonderful example of that. You know, we are now in the 100th anniversary of his discovery of the general theory of relativity. It's a theory of how the force of gravity works. And Einstein was advised by friends and colleagues not to work on it, that he'd never cracked the problem. He was even told that even if you do make headway, nobody will believe the insights that you come to. And yet he had this internal compass where he knew where he wanted to go, and he pursued where that compass was directing him. And in so doing, he changed our understanding of space and time, matter, energy, and the universe. So it's a wonderful story that will be the backbone of my remarks, where we follow this mind that starts off at Earth and ends up at the edge of the cosmos.
Mm. Dr. Brian Green is my guest. He'll be in East Lansing tomorrow evening to launch the 2016 MSU Science Festival. Dr. Green's a theoretical physicist, a co-founder of New York's World Science Festival, and the author of four books. He's also a professor of physics at Columbia University. Now, here at MSU's event, there's a focus on the STEAM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math. Is a focus on STEAM subjects a good thing?
I think it's a great thing. You know, there was a focus which initially began, as you may know, as STEM, without the A, I should say, which
right.
is the art side of things. And it's, I think, vital that we have a more holistic approach to the way we think about our explorations of the universe. I mean, scientists approach truth one way, artists approach truth in a different, but I consider allied way, and ultimately it's the insights of everybody that helps us have a deeper appreciation of the universe and our place within it.
Do American schools not emphasize STEAM subjects enough?
There are a lot of great teachers around this country, so I always am reluctant to generalize, but I have to say that when I talk to many kids around the country, as I do when I go around giving talks, many of them have no idea what science really is. They just think it's something about memorizing the facts that are in their textbook. They don't realize that science is about trying to figure things out, that it's puzzling through, it's battling against the universe, and when we're lucky, on rare occasion, we emerge on the other side with a spectacularly new understanding of things. So when I tell these kids about black holes and the Big Bang, and when they come to, say, pieces of mine that discuss those ideas melded with music and art, I have a piece with Philip Glass about a boy going to a black hole, so it's music and physics and space travel. When they attend performances like that, their view of science totally changes.
Is the bigger challenge in the schools, or is that a result? Are there perhaps too few offerings in the schools because too few young people are interested in those subject areas in the first place? It's kind of a chicken or egg question.
Yeah, the chicken and egg question is always a good one. But in the end of the day, school has such a vital and formative role in what kids are excited by, what they are interested in. And moreover, if you think in a multi-generational sense, when parents themselves go to school and they are not excited by science, then of course when they grow up, they don't communicate that excitement to their own children. So I think school is the vital place where this can change, and science festivals, be it the one in New York, be it the one happening in Michigan, can play a vital role because kids and adults can go together and re-experience what science is about.
You're a specialist in string theory, which our listeners have likely heard of at one time or another. Remind us, please, of the essence of string theory.
Well, string theory is an attempt to realize a dream that Albert Einstein himself had really for the last 30 years of his life. After he discovered the general theory of relativity, he wanted to go further and find what he called the unified theory. One theory, maybe one big equation that would explain everything in the universe, the big, the small, everything in between. Now, he never found the unified theory, and we don't know if we have it yet, but at least on paper, for the first time, we have a candidate, and this candidate is called string theory. So we're working very hard on the mathematics of this theory to try to connect it up to observation and experiment. We've not achieved that yet, but at least on paper, this theory has a chance. At least a chance of being the unified theory that Einstein looked for.
And walk us backward, if you would, maybe a step at a time here, from string theory back to Einstein. Before string theory, was there a scientific preoccupation here?
Sure.
Just before string theory? What was it?
Yeah, I mean, a good question. One way of thinking about it is Einstein's general relativity, since it is a theory of gravity, really matters when things are big. Stars, galaxies, the whole universe. And in that domain, the realm of the big, Einstein's math works incredibly well. But there was another theory being developed at around the same time that Einstein also participated in, which is called quantum mechanics. And that's a theory that describes molecules, atoms, subatomic particles, the really tiny stuff in the world. And for the small things, quantum mechanics does a great job as well. The weird thing is, when you look at the math of quantum mechanics and the math of general relativity, the equations don't compute. They don't work together. When you try to put the two theories together, it all falls apart. Now, we have one universe, so we should have one theory that embraces everything. And yet, when we try to put the laws of the big and the small together in any conventional way, it doesn't work. So the idea of string theory is to fix that problem, to come up with a framework that can put general relativity and the other theory, quantum mechanics, together into one coherent package.
Now, we tend to think of the greatest scientific discoveries happening maybe not all that often, but important smaller discoveries would appear to be happening much more often. Am I right to assume that?
Yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, you're right. I mean, we wish the big breakthroughs happened all the time. Every scientist dreams of having a big breakthrough. But you're right. For the most part, we make incremental progress. And that's really what the driving engine of science is about. I mean, a beautiful example is this discovery of the gravitational waves that you probably heard about, you know, these ripples in the fabric of space that just came out 2 months ago. That was the result of 50 years of research, 50 years of incremental progress in understanding the math, in building the equipment, in fashioning the detectors. There's now one in Louisiana and the other in Washington State. And these folks, many points along the way, could have given up, but they were encouraged by their own incremental progress, the baby steps that ultimately yields the major leap of understanding when the wave of gravity, this ripple in space, finally was detected.
Dr. Brian Green is my guest. He will be in East Lansing tomorrow evening to launch the 2016 MSU Science Festival. He's a theoretical physicist and the author of four books. You've appeared on Letterman, on Colbert, on Charlie Rose. The Washington Post called you the single best explainer of abstruse concepts in the world today. How do you view yourself in that role as a popularizer of science?
Well, I think it's vital for the ideas of science to not be locked away in academic journals or locked away in the ivory tower of the academy, because ultimately we're carrying forth a human journey that began with the explorers in, say, ancient Greece, Egypt, and so on, and everybody should be able to at least understand what's going on, even if they don't have the technical training to, say, participate in the research. So I see myself as a, first and foremost, as a scientist, a physicist, trying to push the boundaries of understanding, but I step outside of that role now and then to try to build a bridge. And it's very gratifying when I give a talk somewhere and some kid says to me, I'm now a graduate student in physics, and I went into physics because I read your book, The Elegant Universe, or I saw one of your television shows. It's gratifying. It also makes me feel very old, but that's just par for the course. So it's a wonderful thing when bringing science to the public can really inspire a kid to go forward and become a scientist.
I'm sure. My next question concerns that book, The Elegant Universe. What single feature of the universe contributes most to this elegance?
Well, the very fact that we're able to understand it. Einstein himself articulated that, I can't remember the exact quote, but something along the lines of the most confusing or the most surprising feature of the universe is that it is intelligible. It didn't have to be the case that the human brain would be able to figure out how black holes work or even that they exist. It isn't necessarily the case that the human brain would be able to figure out how atoms and particles work, but it has. So it's a beautiful thing that we're endowed with a mind that can see patterns in the world and encapsulate those patterns in the language of mathematics. That is beautiful. That is elegant, that you can look at a few symbols on a piece of paper and they tell you something deep about how the world actually functions.
Here in Michigan, people have been learning more about particle acceleration because of Michigan State's impending FRIB, the Facility for Rare Isotope Beams. This would seem to be right up your alley.
Yeah, no, it's exactly the kind of work that has the potential to do what we're talking about, to have breakthrough understanding of our structure of matter and the laws that describe how particles and their conglomerates, atoms and molecules, how they all behave. And I think it's a vital thing that we're having this science festival at Michigan State, because ultimately it's got to be that the general public is excited by these kinds of experiments, because ultimately it's tax dollars which support this research. So in many ways, Science Festival in New York, the Science Festival in Michigan, can be viewed as a kind of status report to the general public so that people can get excited about where this money is going and the boundaries of understanding that is being pushed, and in that way, tell all of their representatives that we need to continue to support science.
Do you spend much time keeping up with other scientific areas besides physics? That's obviously your bread and butter there, but I mean...
Yeah, I try. I'm very much a layperson in other areas of science, but there's a lot of great stuff happening in neuroscience, a lot of great stuff happening in nanoscale science, great stuff happening in the arenas of quantum computing. Of course, big data is all the rage these days. So at a cultural level, I follow these developments.
Have you kept track of the science involved in the global warming discussion?
Not a whole lot. I've never actually investigated the data itself, but you know, my own view, looking at the graphs that everybody else in the general public can look at too, is it seems pretty convincing to me that humankind is having an impact on climate. And my own view, which I hope would be shared more widely, even by those who are skeptical, we have to err on the side of caution. We have to do what is right under the assumption of the worst-case scenario. The Earth is a very precious place. You don't play games with that.
We had a guest last week who's associated with the Dark Sky Movement and who runs a dark sky park up in northern Michigan. And this is a long way of asking you if you're into astronomy.
You know, again, at a cultural level, I don't go out there in the field with my colleagues who do astronomical research, but you know, we don't see many stars in Manhattan. A clear starry night is when you see three stars in Manhattan. But we have a farm in upstate New York where it's dark and clear, and there's nothing like it. I mean, I often have felt that if everybody was to continuously, every evening, experience a deep, dark, starry sky, I just somehow feel that the life would be better.
Dr. Brian Green's been my guest. He will be in East Lansing tomorrow evening to help launch the 2016 MSU Science Festival. Dr. Green's a theoretical physicist, a co-founder of New York's World Science Festival, the author of four books, and is a professor of physics at Columbia University. Dr. Green, thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy your visit to Michigan State.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.